comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Wherever you happen to be, all around this beautiful planet, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. You know, last night we had some tech problems. Now, when things work right, this is talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. But last night, when I pushed the button to talk, you couldn't hear me. We got that fixed, as you can see. But the deal is, it had been working all day, and we test it before every show, and it passed the test. Everything was fine. But when I pushed the button to go on the air, right at that moment, apparently, the microphone jack on the sound card died. Right then. Graveyard dead, and I couldn't talk to you. The rest of the sound card was working, but the microphone jack on the sound card was dead. So I had to quickly line up one of our archive shows. I hope you enjoyed it. And I apologize for the tech problems, but when you deal with computers, things happen. And it did. Rosanna Dana used to say, "It's always something." And she was right. But thankfully, we are back on the air tonight, and everything is beautiful in its own way. Tonight's a special night for me here at the show, because for the very first time, my mother is getting to see the show live. I have sent it to her on some DVDs, so she has seen the show before, but she's never seen a live show. And she's getting to see it live tonight, thanks to my daughter in Austin, Texas, and the assistance of my son, Clay. So to my daughter and my son, let me say hi. And to my mother, hi, Mom. Glad you're in the audience, along with several millions of people around the world in 143 countries, so you are in good company. Or maybe I should say to you folks around the world, in all those 143 countries, you're in good company, because my mom is with us tonight, and that's a good thing. This is also going to be a kind of an interesting night, because of the fact that we are going to be trying something new. We will be trying a brand new phone system where we have I have two guests on tonight, and we'll have them calling into the conference room. And we've never done that before, and we're hoping that works. And I hope you will not be disappointed. But if it doesn't work, we'll play some music and go back to the old phone system. And the reason we're doing that is because this way, it's been suggested to me by a lot of you that I use conference calling when I have more than one guest. And so this way we can have two, three, four guests at a time if we need, or more. And so we've tested it out. The conference room works. But what we don't know is, will it work when we push the button to go live on the air with it? And we'll find out on the other side of the break that's coming up. It's going to be an interesting show tonight. Timothy Green Beckley is here, and we're going to be talking with him about some spooky stuff. We'll be back.
Of Indy 104 and iRadio LA. You can now hear The Kevin Smith Show 7 days a week The Kevin Smith Show live Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific, and the best of The Kevin Smith Show Saturdays and Sundays, 8 to 9:30 p.m. Pacific, only on Indy 104 and iRadio LA. Go to Indy104.com for more information. 7 days of Kevin Smith, you can never get enough.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Tim Beckley. And and the other guest is Claudia Cunningham. Now, you know Tim Beckley. We're going to let him introduce Claudia in just a moment. But Tim publishes something that's really, really cool. It's called The Conspiracy Journal. If you click on his picture on my website, just go over to kevinsmithshow.com, and you click on his picture, you will get a fast trip. You'll get transported over to his website, all right? So be sure you check that out. Tim Beckley has been involved in investigating UFOs, extraterrestrials, men in black, and all kinds of other things that fall into the basket of paranormal. Sometimes I don't really see UFOs as paranormal. But I think really technically they are, because of the fact that there is no scientific explanation for them, simply because the scientists refuse to do the science. Tim Beckley, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm delighted you're here.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's been much too long. Now, one thing I have to say, I believe that you and I would disagree on this, because now I started out many, many years ago believing that UFOs were extraterrestrial. Back in the 1950s, most of the authors who had written on the subject, like Major Donald E. Kehoe and Edward Ruppelt, who was involved with Project Blue Book, you know, the Air Force organization that was set up to investigate this, and of course, they poo-pooed everything and ridiculed it and all, but they always seemed to be a concept of fostering the idea that these things were from outer space. Every other idea was kind of scoffed at, you know. And so I think everybody in this field that's around today at least started out with the idea in mind that these things must be vehicles from off-planet, that they have to be hardware, nuts and bolts. Well, now, as the years have gone on, my ideas and concepts on this have changed considerably. I cannot dispute the idea that we are the only intelligent life in the universe. I think that there obviously has to be other beings of one type or another out there. They could be visiting us from time to time. But I do not believe, when you take the whole of the phenomena as it is presented to us on a global basis, that these ships would be coming here on such a repetitive basis. I mean, here you have, in fact, over Phoenix, the Phoenix lights, of course, that are still very controversial, and many witnesses to this. I mean, hundreds of witnesses, if not more. Same thing up in the Hudson Valley in upstate New York, where giant objects of one type or another were seen by up to 10,000 people. I mean, there was one incident in 1985, where these cars were parked up and down the highway there, and people were getting out of their vehicles and staring up at this gigantic craft that was said to be several times the size of a football field, hovering in the sky silently, making no noise at all, just kind of hovering and gliding over. Well, aerodynamically, we just know that that's almost an impossibility. And also, Kevin, where do these things go? I mean, is it that they're seen over the highway in Arizona and in Hudson Valley, and then all of a sudden they go back to Mars or they go back to outer space? It doesn't seem very likely. It almost seems as if the Earth opens up and swallows them up with them. It's almost as if these things are some sort of projections in the sky rather than physical hardware. Also, the things that they have been noted to accomplish are very similar to a lot of the phenomena associated with the paranormal. In fact, in the last couple of years, I have been researching the history of spiritualism, which goes back to, the mid-1840s, when the Fox sisters in upstate New York started hearing rappings on the wall and on the floor, and dozens of people went to their little abode and actually communicated with or entities who claim to be the spirits of the deceased. Now, I have kind of put two and two together and come up with five. I believe that there is a vast similarity between what has been noted in the seance room and what has been noted in close conjunction with UFO sightings. I do believe that the U.S. government has secretly fostered the idea that these crafts are interplanetary. And
so you don't think any of them are?
Well, no. Like I say, that's an impossible for me to say that. No, some of them obviously do seem to be hardware. I mean, we've had all these cases. Ted Phillips, for example, has over 400 cases where these things have actually landed, you know, scorched the ground. They've caused electromagnetic effects. Some of them could be from outer space. There's no way. In fact, that's one of the problems about UFOs. How do you separate the true UFOs from the non-UFOs?
I don't. I think it's unidentified, it's unidentified. And there can be some of them that are hardware, and there can be some of them that are some kind of a spiritual kind of thing. But if it's unidentified, it's unidentified. And if it's flying, it's flying.
Mm-hmm. But also a lot of these things, as you know, take place not just necessarily flying. They take place on the ground. They take place in the homes of individuals. It's an all-encompassing mystery that has a lot of tentacles to it.
I think that's what makes it such an interesting topic, is it's so big.
No doubt about it. If it wasn't for that, we'd probably be out doing something else this evening, and not here conversing to thousands of people all over the world on a subject that has. And you know, Kevin, once you're pulled into this, there's no escaping. It's like something that through thick and thin I have been involved in since I had my first sighting in 1957, and I've had two other sightings since then. And, of course, I've written numerous books and articles and edited magazines and am the publisher of Inner Light Global Communications. We have something like 279 titles, I think, listed on Amazon.com, and we cover the whole spectrum. You know, people say, well, do you believe everything that you publish? You know, and because we certainly do cover a wide variety of UFO and paranormal-related topics, and I freely say, no, I do not. Because I have to separate myself from the independent UFO researcher and from the publisher. I publish books for several reasons, mainly works that I think people will find of interest to them personally, even though they may not necessarily have the same impact on me that they might to you or to Claudia Cunningham, who's on the line with us.
By the way, hello, Claudia.
Hello, Kevin. Nice to be with you. Hi, Tim.
We're going to get to you in just a second here. Tim.
Okay.
Tim, I don't believe any of it. And I've made no secret of that. And the reason is, I think belief belongs in religion. And when we're talking about UFOs, either we know or we don't know. And it's okay to say, I don't know. We need to investigate it some more.
Well, that is the downfall, though, I think has been the downfall of ufology to a great extent. Everybody has their own ideas and their own theories and their own concept, and there is a tendency to badmouth everybody else who doesn't go along with their particular thinking.
Mm-hmm. That's because they've made a religion out of it.
That they have, and it doesn't matter whether you're on the side of the nuts and bolts or just on the side of the nuts, on the side of the more no, friend.
Hey, look, that's a good place. That's a good place for me to do this. I'm going to do this to you. I'm going to show people something that a side of you they may not know exists. Tim Beckley, years ago, rocking out with Jerry Wills and the rock band UFO.
That's That's right.
People are looking at that on our TV channel now, and it's pretty interesting. Jerry's got dark hair there, where today he's not dyeing his hair. It's blonde.
Well, you know, the band is going to get back together for a reunion at some point. Jim Delatoso is in the band, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, let's see, Randy Winters, who published some of the Billy Meyer material here, was also in the band. And my friend Blue Ocean was the drummer. And, of course, Sue Gordon, who's up in Canada now, but I'm still in contact with her. And so at some point, the band will reunite. Now, I don't know if I'll be in there playing the triangle. That's my main instrument. But you can see it over my head there. But we sang Alien to the tune of Gloria. You know, Gloria.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. But I prefer to be on the other side of the. I've managed bands, you know, and I've known John Lennon and many of the other people who were involved in the glitter rock, David Bowie. In fact, I spoke to many of these individuals, celebrities and musicians, all about their UFO experiences, some of which were very exciting and some of which were very mundane, just like everybody else's, you know. But yes, that was back. Actually, the photograph was taken at our conference in Phoenix. I don't remember the exact year, but it's been a few years and a few inches around the waist to go.
Yeah. Okay, let's get back to the UFO thing, and more specifically, though, what I really want to get to is part of the phenomenon that really, really people were talking about for a while, and then you don't hear anything about it anymore, and that's the Men in Black. Because, you know, the last time you were here, you shared a photograph with us that you took. And as you said, as far as you know, that's the only photograph of a men in black. And so here's an MIB that you shared with us. And
actually, you have one posted on your site tonight that was taken by Alan Greenfield, who I believe has also been on your program.
Mm-hmm.
He claims that this is the fellow there with the sunglasses. Was following a group of UFO researchers around at a UFO conference that was held in West Virginia shortly after the sightings of Mothman. Now, I don't remember whether I was there that year or not. I went to quite a few of the national UFO conferences that Jim Moseley organized, but I'm not sure I was at that one. But according to Alan Greenfield, this individual seemed to be stalking everybody and hovering kind of like in the background and at the next table. And Alan confronted him at one point and said, you know, like, do you want to introduce yourself, or what are you doing, and so forth and so on. And the fellow said, I am a MIB in training, whatever that means. And so at that point, the fellow wandered out of the hotel, and Alan decided to kind of confront him, and he followed him outside, took the photograph, and then the individual disappeared on him. So that would, if that's a legitimate case, and I have no reason to doubt Alan. I mean, he's been around as long as I have on that, and we have shared some of the same controversial ideas. That would make picture number two. Now, people will say, well, these individuals look somewhat human. Well, yes, they do. Now, people say, well, who are the Men in Black? And again, this is a puzzle. But I believe myself that they are not. Government officials. Some people think, well, they've been threatened by the Air Force or government or CIA. I don't believe that's the case. I believe that these are mind-controlled Earthlings, like zombies. That's the best way I can describe it. That there is some outside force, this other power or intelligence, as I refer to it, that are controlling people to do their nefarious deeds, or do their deeds, or whatever you want to say. So, to me, these are kind of like robots or zombies, but they're, in most cases, living, breathing Earthlings who have been possessed, if you want to use that word. Anyway, Claudia, who's on the...
Yeah, why don't you introduce Claudia to us?
Okay, well, now, I first heard from Claudia, I think it was about a year ago. I got an email from her describing a series of events that she was familiar with that took place in a cemetery in upstate New York, in a cemetery where the famous researcher Charles Fort is buried. And let's turn over the microphone to her and have Claudia describe her interest in it. I did use the material in the book, The Curse of the Men in Black, which has just been out about a month now. It's pictured up on the site. But I understand also that Claudia has had some other experiences herself. So, Claudia, why don't you just tell us how you became fascinated and involved with these MIBs?
And let me welcome you to the show, Claudia. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I've had a lifelong fascination with the arcane, even when I was a little kid. I like to say that when my girlfriends were playing with their dolls and giving little tea parties with their teddy bears, I was out under the skies looking up wondering, why am I here? What is this? What's the greater mystery? And I was 5 years old. So I've always been interested in it. And when I was a teenager in the mid-60s, I became very much interested in the UFO books of the time, Frank Edwards' writings, later on John Keel, and then Tim Beckley after that in the 70s. And my one, I don't know, I've had a lot of really odd things happen to me through my life, but my induction into this, I don't know what you would call it, haunting of the Albany Rural Cemetery in upstate New York began in 71. My sister-in-law and her little three-year-old, Lisa, and I decided to take a ride through the cemetery. Now, the cemetery itself is mammoth. It was, I believe, opened in the early 1800s. They moved a lot of the bodies out of the main city of Albany.
You know, if I could just
sure.
mention, there actually, if you type in Google rural Albany cemetery, you'll get a whole site that has nothing but the photographs of the tombstones and all
yes.
there. It's quite an
yes.
interesting site, actually.
Yep. There's a lot on there. But anyway, I think it was, I just did a history of it out of my own curiosity lately, but in 1814, the cemetery was established, and they brought the bodies from the city of Albany, all the early Dutch settlers from the 1600s, a lot of Indians, everything was, they moved the bodies 6 miles outside of Albany to a little village called Menands. The cemetery is located on a huge hill that runs about a mile and a half to 2 miles long, so it's extremely large. And if you go in the main gate, it looks like a Gothic, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer might be lurking in the shadows. It's very eerie.
Well, that's an excellent place for us to step out, because a break is taking over. And we're going to hear that story on the other side of this break, so don't go away, okay, folks? Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guests this evening, Timothy Beckley and Claudia Cunningham. When we had to step away for break, Claudia, you were just about to tell us what it's like when you step inside of this cemetery in Albany.
That's right. There's, like I say, rolling hills, fountains. There are gigantic mausoleums that contain the families of Albany's rich and famous. We have a president who's buried there, Chester Arthur, presidential cabinet members, senators, governors, everybody, plus everyday citizens. But in 1971, I took a ride in there with my sister-in-law and her little daughter, and I decided to get out and kind of look into some of the more ornate crypts, just out of morbid curiosity. And my sister-in-law said, no, go ahead, I'm going to sit in the car. So I had the baby by the hand. And I came to the crypt of John Boyd Thatcher, and he was one of our early mayors of Albany. And so I said, well, let's take a look over here. And I got within maybe 2 feet of this thing, and I heard this big, loud, metallic bang coming from inside of that crypt, Well, being a person of immeasurable courage and fortitude, I threw that kid over my shoulder, got in that car. We went out of there 40 miles an hour backwards. So that was my first experience with that cemetery. But that was many years ago, and I had really forgotten about it. Until a year ago, my girlfriend, who is 55 years old and an RN at the Veterans Memorial Hospital in Albany, she called me, and she lives across the street from the cemetery. She had just moved there. She said, I know no one would want to hear this but you. And she says, I have to come over for coffee because I have to look at you when I tell you this. So I was all excited. I couldn't imagine what she had in mind, but I opened the door and she came in. And she said, I had the experience of my life. And she said, maybe you could guide me in the right direction and try to explain it. So here's her story. This did not happen to me. This happened to my friend, who is a very level-headed, very nice lady who doesn't make up stories. One Saturday, she went into the cemetery. And when you go in, you go over a railroad track. And then there's these great big metal gates that open up. I swear it looks like something out of a vampire movie. You go in, and there's a Gothic building on the left, which is the office that contains all the records of everyone buried there. Across the street from that is the crematorium. Well, Linda went in and took her first left up the hill, and she was just going to walk around because it's very historic. It was a beautiful day. There was a lot of milkweed in the air. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Sure.
But at this, yeah, and it was all over her car. It kind of looked like a little snowstorm there in the cemetery. And it was quiet, and she went up the gravel road, and no one was in front of her and back of her. She had the road to herself, and she figured, well, I'm going to stop here. So she looked in her rear mirror. Nothing was behind her, you know, very quiet. And she looked again, and out of nowhere came this extremely mammoth black SUV. It looked like a military-type vehicle. Jet black windows. No milkweed on this thing at all. It looked like they just drove it out of a showroom. Black tires. She said it just looked evil. And I said, well, how could a car look evil? But she said, I had a really awful feeling about it. She says, I thought they were going to rob me or worse. You know, she said it was just something not right about it. So she put the car in drive, and, you know, she's watching this thing. She figured, well, you know, maybe it's going to come after me. You know, I have to find out what they're going to do. And to her astonishment, it backed up and went down one of these many side roads that's in this cemetery. So she watched it till the top of the thing disappeared, and then she got kind of mad, and she said, well, I'm going to go and see what they wanted. Well, this is her. She's, you know, she has a temper, and it wouldn't have been me, but this is her. So she went to follow the thing, and when she came to where it went down the hill, she noticed one little thing. There wasn't any road there. Just a chain-link fence. No road. This thing vanished right in front of her. So, you know, her heart's up in her throat, and she said, I've got to get out of here. So she went down the main road where she, you know, came in, and this thing was parked right in the middle of this road, right next to the office, nobody else around, and a man all dressed in black was standing next to the driver's side of this vehicle. So she slowed up, and the guy kind of turned around very slowly. He had the whole MIB thing down. He had the hat, the shirt, the, you know, all in black, black sunglasses, and he just kind of looked at her like a little half smile. And she says, I pulled in front of him, and I looked in the mirror, and the guy was gone within, a millisecond. The thing just gone.
And what about the car? Was the SUV gone too?
The car, no, it was there, but the man was gone. So I got online, and I typed in, you know, Albany Rural Cemetery, Menands, New York, haunted, figuring, well, if there's anything, anybody else saw anything, it'll be there. Oh, my God, there's all these different things where people have written in. A couple who floats over the tombstones at dusk in their pajamas are seen. A big black dog. Sinister, quote, sinister men in black. And strange black vehicles. I said, oh my God, Linda, you had a man in black experience. She never heard of it. But so that was her.
Maybe
her story.
Maybe they're all coming to play a tribute to Charles Fort.
Yes, Tim, I think so. That went through my mind, and I didn't know he was buried there until I did see that online when I did my little search, which is really amazing. Maybe his energy is drawing them. But to wind up my story. Now it gets really strange. I was kind of obsessed with this because, as I said, you know, I love anything to do with the unknown. So I was telling everybody I knew about this, and they thought I was crazy, but, you know, what else is new? So I moved back in with my 95-year-old mother, and one day we decided to go over to a nearby shopping center. And I had told her about this incident, and she didn't quite, you know, she's 95, she doesn't understand a lot, so she's, oh, that's nice, dear, you know, she doesn't understand. So we drove over to the dollar store at the Delaware Plaza in Del Mar, and I went in, made my purchase, came out, and here was this great big black vehicle next to the right of my car. And I kiddingly said to my mother, maybe that's what Linda saw in the cemetery. We kind of laughed. I just got the words on my mouth. From around back of this vehicle, and it was just a black, regular-looking black SUV, nothing out of the ordinary. Even had the windows down, and they had coffee cups on the, you know, on the dashboard. Nothing, you know. But this little man, all dressed in black, came from around the back of this thing, and he looked in the car at me. He had a talk about John Lennon. John, I don't know how old you are, but John used to wear a black cap, a leather cap with a visor,
mm-hmm.
very much in style in the 60s. And that's what this little guy had on. He had a black three-quarter length black shirt, black pants, black socks, black the whole thing, and black sunglasses. And I'm mesmerized. I said, oh, my Lord. I said, isn't that, he looks out of place. So he walked to the front of my car, and he just very slowly turned around, and he looked right at me, and he gave me this little smile, and it was almost like it was a private joke that we were sharing. It was almost like I had the feeling like he knew me, and it's like he was saying, well, you want to see one, sister, here I am. So to the, I don't know, it could have been a man, that it could have been a chauffeur, it could have been, you know, just a man dressed in black. I have no idea, but I think from that day forward, that was like a confirmation that the story I heard from my friend was in fact real.
But all right, let me ask you a question or two.
Mm-hmm.
The one that you saw, you're there getting into the car at the parking lot, you and your mom, and you saw this car. It's all black. Is it an SUV or is it a limousine? What is it?
It was a black SUV. It looked like anybody's, you know. I see a million of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a little bit bigger. It was one of the bigger models,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, I doubt it's going to be a chauffeur driving an SUV.
That's right.
Yeah, that's could be, but I doubt.
In the park. I doubt.
You know,
it,
now here's,
in the parking
here, here's an interesting little. Here's a little interesting sidebar. Throughout the history of the appearance of the Men in Black in the United States, they've often been reported, or most frequently been reported, driving black cars, either Lincolns or Cadillacs. I understand that in the U.K., they are most often seen driving Jaguars. Now, why that is, I have no idea at all. But one of the things that seems to stand out about these individuals, you know, I think most people would think of the Men in Black is kind of dressing like an FBI or a Secret Service agent. I guess they would get that impression more or less from some of the early artwork and also from the movie that Will Smith was in. They also look kind of like the Blues Brothers, you know, Dan Aykroyd. Well,
mm-hmm.
actually, that's kind of peculiar, too, because there's quite a string of synchronicities that run throughout the whole UFO phenomena. And, of course, Dan is a big UFO buff. He made a DVD called on UFOs. He's a big supporter of MUFON, and he even claims to have a Men in Black experience. And his dad recently wrote a book on spiritualism. So there's always some sort of weird tie-in. But one of the things actually about most of the cases of the Men in Black, they always seem to be pretty unkept. They wear turtleneck sweaters, and their clothes seem a little bit odd, as if they just kind of fell into them. They seem to have kind of maybe wraparound or almond-shaped eyes. Oftentimes, even they seem to wear, even if they're men, they wear some sort of outrageous pancake makeup and lipstick. Now, one of the most peculiar reports of an MIB that came to my attention recently was made by a local council member in the town of Winchester, England, who says that there was a a flap of UFO sightings in the town near a military base, and he saw on several occasions, and I'm quoting here now from the local newspaper, a ballerina-like alien that walked like a penguin and twirled her arms in a circular motion. She went about her way laughing, and no one seemed to pay her any attention, as if she had control over their minds. Now, this is a very serious report. I mean, we might laugh and scoff at this guy and say he's one of those fringe types, but the actual newspaper there in that town ran quite an article on it and did an interview with him, and apparently it did tie in with a series of UFO sightings near a military base there. So the one thing about these individuals, they always seem to look a little bit strange, as if they're out of place.
Okay, now you said earlier that you think they are humans that are under someone else's control. And you don't think it's the government. Who do you think it is?
Well, my concept of UFOs now is that the phenomena itself is created by some invisible force or some invisible energy, intelligence. There's no way of really describing it, because I don't think that we have any way of putting it into the framework of science and physics as we know it today. There has been something here that has existed alongside of the human race since the beginning of time. Whether it was created at the same time separately or what, I mean, there's no real way of knowing, and there's no real way of asking them, because even when they do show themselves, they are prone to make appearances in ways that are more familiar to the people that they are trying to communicate or contact. See, also, I don't believe that they feel that it's necessary for the truth to be known. They exist through our energy and our belief in them, regardless of what they are or how we see the conceive of them. See, so I think even in a lot of cases where people say, "Oh, so-and-so made up a story," like back in the early 1950s, the contactee movement was very big, especially out on the west of the coast.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and we will be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Tim Beckley, and I should say my guests this evening are Tim Beckley and Claudia Cunningham. Tim, I cut you off in mid-sentence because we had to go to break, but I understand that Claudia has to leave us, so I want to go back to Claudia for just a moment, and first I want to say, Claudia, I really appreciate you coming on tonight and telling us about your experience with the Men in Black. But now I want to ask you something before you go. I want to ask you, what do you think it means? Did you have any prior UFO connection or anything that would make a Men in Black show up at your place?
Yes. I went to Ireland about 13 years ago, and when I was coming up out of JFK Airport, over Long Island, I was in a little American Airlines Eagle. It was a little tiny plane, and I was kind of looking out of the, out of the window and watching the Hudson River below. And there was this spinning silver. It looked like a coin, but it was like it was doing flips. It was pacing the plane. It followed us probably for about 10 minutes. And it was the weirdest little thing. I've always wanted to know what that was. There's just no explanation for it, it was a perfectly round little disc type thing. But that was about 13 years ago. And I would say when we had the Hudson Valley flap up here, the UFO flap in the 70s. Again, I was going over to that Del Mar Plaza with my grandmother. It was I saw the biggest harvest moon I've ever seen in my life. It was mammoth. It was over the Thatcher or the mountains up in our about 10 miles out of where I live. And my grandmother and I, we just kind of pull over, and I said, I've never seen anything that looks like that. And we were just, it was amazing. So we finally pulled away. We're heading back over to the shopping center. And all of a sudden, the moon, or whatever it was, it looked absolutely normal. It was a little man in the moon face. It was, just a normal moon. And we got up the road a little bit, and it was like somebody put on a big flashlight, and it was going all over the treetops, back and forth, back and forth. And it was just so creepy. I don't know what it was, you know. I mean, I thought it was a UFO, but who knows. So I came home and told my parents, and my mother and father said, well, you know, the other night when we were out, we saw these that looked like flying boxcars, like a train, you know, little mm-hmm. train cars flying with, like, Christmas lights on it over near Del Mar. So this is a haunted area. But that was in 73, January.
Can you think of a reason why the men in black would have shown up in that parking lot?
No, the only thing I can think, and I don't even know, like I say, maybe a limo was parked over in the parking lot, maybe the guy was coming over to, who knows, get a cup of coffee. It could have been just, you know, anybody. But if it was something out of the ordinary, it might have been just a kind of, like a joke. I think they have a wicked sense of humor. In other words, you want to see one, sister? Well, here I am. That's the only thing I can think of. I don't want to see one again.
Like I said, I think they want to, whatever this energy or force is, they want to attract attention. So they mm-hmm. could appear any way that they want. Sometimes the men in black are very sinister, and they actually really do seriously threaten individuals. And at other times, they seem to be very coy and very camp. But that's one of the reasons that we can't pinpoint this whole thing, I think, is because we're looking for an answer by observing the objects and the entities when it's actually some face behind the mask. And that's what we really don't see. We see all this peripheral phenomena, and we perceive it and conceive it in our own way. But that's not where we have to be looking. We have to go beyond that. And I don't even know for sure if there's a way of doing that.
All right, let me say to Claudia, I know you have to go, and you're a caregiver for your mom, and you need to tend to that.
Right.
But again, thank you so much for being here, and we'll look forward to hearing from you again.
I sure hope so, and thank you for the chance to tell my strange little tale.
All right, you're certainly welcome.
Good evening.
All right.
Okay,
good night.
Good night,
Claudia.
Bye-bye. Good night, Tim.
Good night.
Tim, in response to what you just said, let me tell you, last night we had technical difficulties, big time. The mic input on the sound card, as soon as I pushed the mic button to activate the mic, that input died. And so I couldn't do the show last night. I had to quickly pull up an archive and play it. And the one that I played was Daryl Sims. And interestingly, Daryl Sims said the same thing. He said the real story is who the management is. It's not these little entities that you see, and it's not the UFOs. It's who is behind that. Who's the management? And he devised a way to at least bump it up to what he called mid-management and forced two of them to appear. And it was quite an interesting story. But he said the same thing you're saying tonight, that the real story is not the UFOs and it's not these entities that we see, whether it's Men in Black or the Greys or whoever. It's who's behind it.
Well, one of the intriguing things about this, you know, is that a lot of people that get into this see it from a very narrow point of view. They start out with some preconceived idea or belief system on this. UFOs have to be, you know, from outer space, or they have to be from inside the Earth, or they have to be this, or they have to be that. And that's kind of like walking around with blinders on. You know, mm-hmm. one of the lucky things about being involved in this for so many years. And I started out when I was 10 years old, although I did have some paranormal experiences before that, is that you get to see it not only over a long period of time, because looking at it for just 6 months or a year will tell you nothing. Also, you have to see this as a global event. It is not just something that is happening in Arizona or in Minneapolis or in the Hudson Valley in upstate New York. In fact, up until the Internet came into its own, I don't think a lot of people in the UFO field, with a few exceptions, even realized how widespread this was. But even back in the 1960s and early 1970s, when I was putting out, I started at 15 putting out a little publication called the Interplanetary News Service Report. Now, we actually exchanged publications, some of which were in English and some of which were not, with publishers, similar publishers and researchers all over the world. We were receiving magazines from the Netherlands, from South America. There was a really good organization there called the SBDV, and I have no idea what that stands for. There was a fellow by the name of Walter Bueller, who was the head of this organization, and they had hundreds of members in Brazil, which is still a very active country and has always been as far as the flying saucers go. In fact, if there is ever going to be such a thing as disclosure, which I actually doubt, because I don't think the governments really have that much of an idea about what's going on. I mean, they know that they exist, there's no doubt about that, but I don't think they know any more, really, than most of the civilian researchers do. They know that they have a pattern of unexplained sightings, and it entangles everything from religion, you name it, and in history, archaeology. It involves all of this, and to come out and to say that would just totally, I think, put the kibosh on civilization. I mean, it would have a great effect on a lot of people's lives, especially those that sit in the seat of power.
All right, then. Now we have a break coming up, but let me tell you what I just thought of as you were saying this. What I thought of is, if what you're saying is the case, then the big secret that the government is keeping is not UFO technology secrets. The big secret is the secret they don't know what's going on, and they're scared to death.
Well, that's what I would believe after following this for so many years.
And if they let it be known that it's out of their control, they're scared, they're frightened. Then they think
the public is and the public is not only frightened, perhaps, but they are scared of their own stability. And you can see how civilization today is pretty much right out there on the edge. I mean, with all the economic problems and terrorism and everything else that's going on, well, this is just one more item that could push us over the edge. Now, I think, though, that there are some of these concepts. In fact, one of the reasons that I liked, people say, oh, you didn't really believe in those contactees and George Damski and George Van Tassel and all. And I said, but their concepts were very exciting.
All right. We'll hear more about that when we come back from this break. More with Tim Beckley, folks, on the other side. So don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest, Tim Beckley. And Tim, we had to cut you off right in the middle of a sentence, but we were talking about the idea that the possibility is that the government perhaps does not know really a whole lot more than we know, and revealing that fact may be what the result of that may be what they're afraid of.
Well, you know, one of the reasons, I think going back to the early 1950s, they tried to secretly foster the idea or put in the minds of the American public that UFOs were coming here from outer space, even though they would rather, the bottom line is they would rather have you not believe in UFOs, but if you're going to believe in UFOs, it's better that you believe that they're from outer space. And the reason for this is that I believe that in the early days of the UFO sightings, that a lot of the craft that we were seeing, especially if there was a crash at Roswell and it wasn't a weather balloon, which I'm convinced that it wasn't, I believe that these devices were vehicles that were being tested based on German technology left over from World War II. I mean, we know for a fact, under the Freedom of Information Act, there have been thousands of documents that have now been released concerning Project Paperclip, which involved the government and the military bringing over hundreds of ex-Nazi sympathizers and scientists and engineers that were working on various projects in Germany.
And some of them were high-ranking SS officers like Wernher von Braun.
Yes, yes, indeed they were. And if you read the, of course, now Hitler and especially some of his SS henchmen were fascinated with the occult. Back in the 1930s, just when Hitler was coming into power, they were some of these SS officers were involved, actually, they weren't probably SS officers at the time, but they were involved in holding seances. And during these the various seances, their mediums, a group of actually very attractive female mediums, were channeling entities who purported to be from some other dimension. And they were getting a lot of information about a bizarre, at least to us, form of technology which would enable them to travel to the stars. I believe that the Germans were working on this. How far advanced they got along in this these concepts, I have really no way of knowing. But I believe that when they came over here, that a certain branch of the U.S. Military or intelligence operators here, perhaps even before the CIA or connected with the organizations that were involved, that even built Area 51, were working or collaborating with these ex-Nazis into developing this technology. So I believe that alongside the rocket propulsion, a super secret technology has been developed here in this country, and it's not based on any interplanetary, you know, any exchange of information with extraterrestrials. It's based on this German technology. So better that you believe that these objects are from outer space, if you have to believe at all, than accept the idea that we might have been in collaboration with some very sinister earthly individuals. Now,
yeah, but the thing is, we now know for sure that we were in collaboration with them. We know that, you know, a very strong core, a strong contingent of ex-Nazis.
Okay, well, you know this, and I know this, but, you know, there's a whole segment of the population out there that is totally ignorant to most of what we discuss on a regular basis. I mean, there are people out there who just don't want to hear it. They just think it's all, you know, a conspiracy theories, that it's all just something that we've made up in our mind, that certainly nobody in the government here would ever stoop to such low levels.
Well, the only conspiracy theory that actually gets reported on an almost daily basis is the Britney Spears, Lindsay Lohan conspiracy against thinking.
That's true.
Yeah, now they report on that conspiracy.
Well,
but no, I think it's pretty common knowledge outside of UFO circles that Project Paperclip did take place. And the reason it's fairly common knowledge is because that's the core contingent of NASA in the beginning.
Yeah. Anyway, so this technology has developed alongside our own, and we're just wasting billions of dollars in taxpayers' money and we've never gotten further than the, you know, the moon. In fact, you know, people think, oh, it's, well, some people think that, well, the moon, the landing was a hoax. Well, I don't know if it's a hoax, but, you know, it's very darn strange. Here, our last landing on the moon was back, what, in the 1960s, right? How can 50 years go by and we can't make the same voyage? We've forgotten the information that it allowed us to do this? It just doesn't seem imaginable. I mean, to me, that's beyond comprehension. I mean, we know here with the, just take the computers, for example. I mean, I remember back when, it was a UNIVAC, I think it was, would take up a whole floor of a building. And now you can walk around and carry a computer in the palm of your hand. So technology increases, doesn't go backwards. How is it all of a sudden that we forgot how to leave the Earth's atmosphere? Something fishy there. Now, I do think that we went to the moon, but maybe we are covering up the fact that there might be some strange artifacts, or that somebody else rules the lunar surface, and it ain't us.
Okay, who would that be?
Well, maybe some of these German scientists, or maybe some other race of beings. I don't know. I mean, that's open to conjecture, but somebody is on the moon, and I don't think they want us to know that.
Okay, so you're, even though you think that most of the UFO information, most of the sightings and experiences are of earthly origin, you're still open to the idea that there are possibly extraterrestrial beings out there.
Well, it could be this that this other intelligence also went to the moon centuries ago, because now we know for a fact that throughout the history of our own planet here, there seems to be remnants of the fact that this other civilization or this other race or group has been visiting or has been here throughout the, you know, since the beginning of the creation, possibly. You know, one of the interesting things is, Kevin, is the fact that a lot of the researchers who started out being nuts and bolts people, you know, that believe that this is all extraterrestrial, have moved far away from that. In fact, a good friend of mine, and I don't know if you've had him on the program or not, is Philip Imbrogno.
Mm-hmm. And, yes, I've had him.
Okay, well, mm-hmm. He's got a couple of new books, actually, and he was an associate of Dr. J. Allen Hynek. In fact, Dr. Hynek would go up and visit him, and they would interview the witnesses together up in the Hudson Valley while that big flap was going on. And, you know, after a while, after a couple of years of researching this, Phil said to Dr. Hynek, you know, there seems to be something more to this than just nuts and bolts, objects in the sky. And Dr. Hynek confessed that he was going in that direction as well. But he said, you know, better not to tell people about that or to promote those ideas, because the scientific community won't take us seriously. Well, I was one of the editors of the Close Encounters poster magazine when the movie, you know, after the Steve Spielberg movie came out. And I spent a couple hours here and there with Dr. Hynek interviewing him for the magazine and for a couple other UFO publications I used to write for. And he told me some fairly incredible stories. He was a big believer in the Men in Black, but he didn't announce it openly because he thought that it would take away the credibility, his credibility and the credibility of the subject. But he told me, he said he had dozens of reports from people who felt that their mail was being tampered with, that their telephone was being tapped. In fact, he said that he had received a telephone call from the sheriff of some rural community, I think up in the Minnesota or Iowa, where there had been a flap of UFO sightings, and apparently this officer had been one of the key witnesses, and he was being followed around by one of these men in black. And apparently there were quite a number of instances revolving the men in black that he knew about. One witness who was a pilot was going to see Dr. Hynek, and he never showed up at Dr. Hynek's hotel room. And finally, a couple of days later, Hynek, you know, got in touch with him and said, you know, I was waiting all afternoon for you. And he said, well, I have been warned not to discuss the subject anymore. And he said about how somebody had pulled his car over to the side of the road, you know, and got out and actually threatened to beat the bejesus out of him. if he went ahead with his interview and discussed his UFO sightings anymore.
Well, let me tell you a quick story. Frances Emma Barwood was a city councilwoman.
Oh, yes.
And one of the witnesses to the Phoenix Lights actually had video. He was a veteran. Had video of not the flares, but the actual object that people saw over the city.
Yes.
He calls her office and asks if she would like to have the video. And she said yes. And she told him what address to send it to or bring it to. And, you know, her office. And it never arrived. And so she called him back after several days and said, you know, I wanted to see the video. What is the story? And he said, well, those men from your office came and picked it up. Mm-hmm. And she said, I don't have any men that work in my office. What are you talking about? And he described them. And what he described is men in black. And they came to his apartment and said, we're here to pick up the tape.
Mm-hmm. Well, we heard a story, in fact, interviewed a fellow by the name, I think his name was Danny Gordon. He had a TV or a radio show out of, it's been so long ago, I don't remember the exact details, but I think Virginia. And there had been a flap of UFO sightings there, and he had even taken some photographs. They weren't very spectacular photographs. I mean, they weren't the Billy Meyer craft or anything like that. But they showed a pattern of lights or objects in the sky. Well, he received a phone call from somebody who claimed to be a government or an Air Force official who said, you know, Danny, would you bring your photograph? We'd like to examine them and try to, you know, see if we have an explanation for them. And he gave him an address where to meet them. Well, when he got to that address, there was nobody there, and finally he went back home, and the negatives, I think the negatives had been stolen, and his files had been gone through, and they were all over the apartment, and the house, you know, the apartment had been broken into and so forth. In fact, I believe also, too, a member of his family was later fatally shot. He could never really connect it to the this particular incident, but after his sighting and the photographs that he took, there seems that there was this pattern of negativity that seemed to follow him that was associated with these men in black type individuals. In fact, now, they often, if there's any pattern, and I can't say that there really is, but where they would seem to appear the most is where there is some sort of physical evidence that has been left behind. In fact, I remember one story that was just recently published. The Tucson, there's a gal who does a column for the Tucson Chronicle on UFOs. I think it's just on the internet; it's not in the actual paper. And she's very interested in the subject, and she does maybe a weekly column. And I described to her some of the incidents that are in my files and in my book, The Curse of the Men in Black. And a couple of them actually involved the sightings of these MIBs in Arizona. Now, this one particular incident involved a newspaper delivery boy. He was out doing his run probably about 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, whenever they deliver the paper. And he was riding along on his bicycle, you know, and all of a sudden he hears this wishing sound, and something lands in front of him, smacks into an automobile. Something fell out of the sky or shot out of the sky, knocked over a mailbox, and dented the back of this automobile. Well, he wanted to, you know, get to the authorities and tell them something had fallen from the sky and there was some damage done. And just as he was trying to pedal off on his bicycle, a black car pulled up. And a gentleman got out and he said this guy was very, very hostile. Well, he wanted to even know, I mean, he described in this interview that the newspaper did with him, how would this person even know about this incident since it had only happened maybe, you know, a minute and a half before. So anyway, the fellow warns him, you know, don't talk about this to anybody. You're not to say a word to it. Anyway, the kid got even more frightened. I think he was about, you know, 13 or 14 years old. He got even more frightened, and he pedaled off on his bicycle and went to tell his mother. And anyway, finally, his mother I went back to the area, and apparently some of the neighbors around where this had happened had come out of the house. I guess they noticed that there was a commotion on the street, but the dented car had also been gone, as if it had been towed off or vaporized. And the mailbox, which had been laying halfway in the middle of the street, was gone as well. So somebody came along, and I don't know what kind of physical evidence that is, but I guess if you had a bumper and you could scrape it, you might find some strange metal and all. In fact, the first classic Men in Black episode involving Albert K. Bender, which took place up in Connecticut in 1953, happened, I think, within a week or two of an episode that involved something shooting out of the sky and plastering its way through a billboard. Now, it didn't come out of the sky and go through the billboard like a meteorite and land on the ground. It wasn't a piece of molting, a rock or metal there. It seemed to go in the opposite direction, as if it was going up, coming maybe parallel for a while and shooting up for the... And they investigated this, Augie Roberts and Dominic Lucchesi. And I guess Albert K. Bender, he was the head of the International Flying Saucer Bureau, reported on this in his Space Review. That was the name of his little mimeograph publication that he put out at the time. And it was shortly after that episode that these three individuals came knocking at his door, or maybe they came right through the door, if one were to believe what he said later on, dressed in these dark brimmed hats, and the long trench coats and the sunglasses, and warned him not to speak about what had happened. Apparently, he claims that he had stumbled upon the secret of where flying saucers originated from. One of his big theories was that the UFOs had bases at the North and the South Pole, which is kind of interesting because it kind of ties in with this idea about the Project Paperclip and these Nazi engineers and scientists. There's one theory that has been floated for many, many years, is that they did set up an operation at the poles. In fact, supposedly Admiral Byrd, in his diary, talks about meeting these German-speaking persons there while he was on one of his expeditions. Anyway, that Albert K. Bender's being silenced in 1953 was what started all of this. That was the first modern case that we know of the visitation by the Men in Black, which was so amply described in a book by Gray Barker called They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers. Now, when I read this book, it just sent shivers up and down my spine. And in fact, I think I mentioned earlier that one of the strange things that seems to be rooted in the UFO and paranormal is an unruly number of synchronicities that seem to take place. I mean, beyond just mere coincidence. When I was in the third or fourth grade, I had to do my first book review. Now, most kids, I guess, would pick in those days something like A Tale of Two Cities. I can't even imagine what else, but no, I guess we had the ability to choose the book that we wanted to review. And so what book did I pick? I picked They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers. And little did I know that within about 6 years, the author of that book, Gray Barker, would publish my first book, The Shaver Mystery and the Inner Earth, and that later when he passed away in the 1970s, I actually bought the last 50 copies of that book from his estate. I still have a few of them on the shelf. So there's this kind of unnatural synchronicity that seems to just float through the UFO field, things that are just beyond the coincidence. I mean, I have a whole just a whole ledger full of these things that I have collected.
Well, UFO is another way to spell the word weird.
It is.
Because it's not that people who have seen UFOs are weird. It's not that people who say, look, I know what I saw. They're not weird. It's that the whole topic has all kinds of weirdness about it. And that's one of the reasons that, probably one of the reasons that scientists don't want to take a look at it, but they need to.
Yes. They would have to just change their entire concept of of physics, the universe. I mean, it would just it just encompasses so much. You can't just say, "Oh my goodness, here's a physical spaceship. Let's go meet the visitors from Mars." It goes way beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I have done an investigation into the spiritualist movement that took place about 150 years ago, both here in the United States, but all over the world. And there's so many similarities between what took place in the seance room. Levitations, you know, there were... okay, one thing is the skeptics in that era, like Harry Houdini, would say, "Oh, it was all hokum. That all you can create any kind of phenomena that you want in a totally darkened room." But the truth of the matter is that a lot of things that occurred were not in totally dark rooms. They were done with lantern light and with the shades parted. Only a small percentage, actually, of the events that transpired were taking place in the dark. Well, we have reports of people actually levitating at the seance table. Now, I'm not talking about just table tipping where maybe somebody could be jerking the table with their knee or their toe or something. There are instances where mediums actually floated to the ceiling, and to prove that that they had floated there, they would take a pencil and mark an X on the ceiling so that the researchers could could see it later on. There was one famous medium who was actually picked up in her chair and placed on the table that everybody was seated around. Well, you've got all kinds of levitations and teleportations associated with UFO sightings. Look at about how many cases there are where people have actually levitated inside of UFOs. I mean, one of the most famous cases, but certainly not the only one, would be the case down in Pascagoula where Hickson and Parker were out fishing one night and saw this object in the sky and they were taken on board a ship. They reported that some sort of port on the side of the craft opened up, and before they know it, they were being beam me up, Scotty.
I remember when that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that happened. That was after the Travis Walton event, wasn't it?
I think it was the early 19, maybe about 1973. So that
okay.
Could have been before Travis Walton. I'm not sure on the.
Yeah, I know. I'm not sure which one comes first, but I know they were not far apart.
Yes. Well, of course, Travis Walton was also taken up by through the same means. Also, how about the fellows? Larry Warren is a good. Larry Warren and Peter Robbins are good friends of mine. Larry was involved in the incident over there in Bentwaters, which is a totally fascinating story.
All right, we have to step away for break, and. When we come back, Tim, I want to open up the telephone line so our audience can join us if they would like to, and you and I will continue to talk. Ladies and gentlemen, we shall return. Some of the music used here on The Kevin Smith Show comes from the great independent artists at GarageBand.com. Go to GarageBand.com and check out the fabulous selection they have of great independent music by great independent artists. GarageBand.com. Check it out. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest this evening, Tim Beckley. And, we're talking about some pretty weird stuff. We're talking about a part of the UFO phenomena that used to be talked about a lot, and we don't hear a lot about it anymore. It comes and goes, but right now you don't hear a whole lot about Men in Black, and you don't hear a lot about the... you hear some, but not a lot about the idea that many of these UFOs, perhaps even the majority, may not be nuts and bolts, vehicles, crafts. Some may be, some may not be.
But that's what we're talking about and the weirdness that goes with the world of UFOs. I want to open up our telephone lines and allow our audience to join us if you have a question or if you have a comment for Tim Beckley. We want you to have the opportunity to speak with him directly. And you do that by calling our studio. And here's the number, the main number in the studio, 623-444-5889. If you need to call me toll-free, you may do so. And the telephone number, the toll-free number in the USA and Canada is 888-223-4599. If you are outside of the USA and outside of Canada, we don't have an international toll-free number, but we do have something almost as good. It's called the flash message. Any flash messages sent from the United States or Canada get dumped into the delete box automatically. I don't even see them. Why is that? Because we have telephones for you, and I'll even pay for the call. How about that? Let's go to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, you know, this stuff is all over the rocks for, like, ancient times, and everybody knew about them, and the Egyptians knew about them, and things kind of got lost, and we researched it, and we know they've been here for millions of years. And I think that humans have been here for millions of years, too, on and off, because they have a footprint, and our genomes are different than, like, a Neanderthal or an ape. I just wanted to say, by the 1940s, with Roswell, I 100%, I'd say 99.9% believe that it was absolutely true because of the testimony between so many people. I mean, Kevin often says that in a court case, testimony puts people away for a long time. Well, if you have the coroner, you have the nurse, you have more people, and if you look at Jesse Marcel's face, it's almost a joke. He was friends with the lieutenant that called a lot of the shots, and so it was probably real. So by the 60s, they knew that stuff was going to be there on the moon. Whether it was hollow or there's glass buildings, by the time they landed there, I believe there was some real footage, and I believe it happened, but I believe everything after that got doctored. And I want to end with, I think the chat room's great, but I went on there to check it out because I go there once a month to talk to you, and I don't, like, pat your bald head and everything and talk about this and that. I went there, and there was a lot of information going by in audio, and I play Simon Says, so I know audio, and I can take in a lot, even at double speed. I play your show at double speed. If you pull it down to 0.75, it sounds crazy. Put it up to 2.0, and Kevin sounds like he's on helium. I just want to say that they were totally distracted, and they're my best friends, and I love them, and they're Kevinites, and just go on there and form a club for after the show so you can talk to it. I'll leave you with this. The Men in Black, I don't even want to get involved in. I'm more into the science and the alien research. I just want to say that if you look at the picture, and please pull it up, everyone will laugh, it looks like a cross between Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, and they're both actors. So if you look into that and take it as evidence, maybe they're actors. So check it out, please, for the love of God, bring it up one more time. Thank you, and have a happy Friday night.
Okay. Thanks, Bob. there's every possibility that the people who are doing the Men in Black thing may be hired to go act a role. That's a possibility, too, isn't it, Tim?
Well, I think they're being controlled. So, yes, in a sense, they are actors. This is they are taking on a character.
I think when we start looking for who's behind it, it almost seems, Tim, like there has to be some human agency involved. And by agency, I don't mean a government agency, although it could be that. I just mean there has to be a human agent somewhere, it would seem, that is pulling the strings, pushing the buttons, and making it happen. Any thoughts on that?
Well, they certainly could have they certainly could have terrestrial representatives. I mean, you've had guests on the program who talk about the bloodline of the Illuminati. There are some people who think that these would be the cohorts of the Men in Black, or even of some of the negative extraterrestrials. Is there a controlling mechanism here? I suspect there might be some group amongst us who has an inkling of what's going on. David Icke talks about these serpents or reptilians that are able to shapeshift. You know, I was going to say, well, that seems pretty wild and far-fetched, but then everything that we're talking about is pretty far-fetched and pretty wild. So I tend not to rule anything out. I sit here and I try to gather and collect all the information that I can. And then I have my I have my prejudices. I mean, there are some things that I just think are just super silly, and I would find, you know, I would want to see some monumental evidence that something was actually transpiring. I would say that I'm fairly skeptical. I don't think that I'm a gullible person. In fact, I'm looking to know, but I don't grasp onto straws. I'm not like you say a believer. I'm a pretty cold cut on this. I mean, I want to see some evidence, and the evidence that I see just points to more of a terrestrial origin, terrestrial in the sense of not being you know, aliens that we think of. But, you know, again, there could be a little bit of everything mixed in, and that's why it makes it actually so difficult to identify the UFOs, because if you have 15 or 20 UFOs, you have a whole mixture of everything. You've got some objects that may just have mundane explanations. A lot of the objects seen in the sky are floating lanterns and balloons and God knows what else, right? Maybe even a few reflections or mirages or ball lightning. So you've got to figure out which of those and take those out of the equation, right? And so let's say out of 10 sightings, you've got maybe 6 left. Well, those 6 are a puzzlement, and it could be that the UFOs are... Now here, for example, we have a lot of these earth lights that are seen in different parts of the country. The Brown Mountain lights in North Carolina. The old spook light up there in on the border of Oklahoma and Missouri. You've got them, I think, in upstate New York. Sometimes they're seen around cemeteries. Sometimes they're seen in up in the mountains. Some people think
one very famous place is Marfa, Texas.
Yes, that's what I was trying to think of. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now. Okay, so again, you know, those with scientific credentials or academic credentials would say, "Oh, there's a natural explanation. It's the minor shifting of the Earth, the crust, that causes you know, kind of like a plasma to appear." Well, these plasma, and I don't think they're plasma in the sense that we know of them, are under intelligent control. I mean, I spent some time actually with Alan Greenfield and Jim Mosley and my friend Joshua Warren. Lives up there in North Carolina, and he's done an extensive investigation of Brown Mountain Lights. We only spent a week there, but back in the, I guess it would be back in the early 1970s, I went up there, and of course the legends of these lights go back hundreds of years. You know, the native tribes that live in the area reported seeing these, and they had a legendary explanations. You know, they thought that they were the spirits of tribal, you know, members of the tribe and so forth. The individuals that we talk to now, they report seeing these glowing orbs, some of which are maybe the size of a basketball. That would seem to be about maybe what most people have observed. And you would say, well, okay, that maybe it's a natural phenomena, but these things are under intelligent control. I remember one gentleman, I think his name was George Rose. It was the Rose family that lived up there. And they would see these things on a regular basis, you know, and they would try to get a closer examination. So they would walk towards the object, right? And all of a sudden, it would just disappear. And it would reappear. They'd turn around, and it would be
instead of being 25 feet in front of them, it would be 25 feet in back of them. Well, you know, there were so many sightings up there for a period of time that they actually even built a watchtower where people, some of them tourists, some of them local, were going up and watching these things on a regular basis. But any time they would try to get closer to them, they would dematerialize. These things were intelligent. Even though they might have been an earthly phenomena of some type, they were beyond just ball lightning or plasma that we would think of. In fact, there was a gentleman by the name of Ralph Lael who lived up in the mountains. He had the Outer Space Museum. I remember driving up there one day and saying, wow, this is a crazy place to have a little shack called the Outer Space Museum. And we went inside, and this gentleman, he's since now deceased, and the museum is no longer there. He had, in fact, a little mummified creature that was he kept under the counter, and he'd pull it out and say, oh, you know, this was the mummified alien or something. Well, that was kind of a just made-up little story or something. But he also claimed that he had been taken inside. He went inside the mountain, and he went in the spaceship. You know, in other words, whatever you find in one part of the country, right, you'll find in another place where people are having experiences. There are a lot of places that I have gone to just to track down, like, a mundane UFO landing, you know, something maybe that pressed down in a farmer's field. I remember back up in Athens, Ohio. I had to go there to visit an associate. And there was this little clipping that somebody had sent me from the local Ohio newspaper, and it was about this landing. So I figured, well, this is within like 20 miles of where I'm going to be. Let me take a drive out there and see if there's any physical evidence left. Well, I was going to say farmer, but he really wasn't a farmer. There was like just a little patch of corn back of the house. It didn't go, you know, it didn't stretch for acres or anything. But apparently his grandson had seen something strange in the sky, and they went out there the next morning, and this thing had been had left an indention. Something had landed and had matted down the corn stalks. That was an early crop circle. In those days, they weren't called crop circles. They were called saucer nests. And so I said, well, you know, outside of your grandson's sighting, has anybody else reported seeing anything unusual? And he said, yeah, you know, we've heard of reports of some strange things.
All right. We have to step away for a break. So we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Tim Beckley. We had a flash message that came in. It was addressed, a question addressed to Jeff. So when Jeff's on the show again, we will bring that question up on the show, okay? We're talking with Tim Beckley, and we're talking about Men in Black. We're talking about the whole idea of some intelligence behind them and some intelligence behind a lot of the phenomena we see, that some of that phenomena doesn't appear to be nuts and bolts vehicles. There's a guy out in Phoenix, Arizona, Tim. You may be familiar with him. His name is Jeff Woolline.
Yes, I've heard him on your show.
Okay, now Jeff, when he first started proposing that a lot of these UFOs, and he'll call them that, they're unidentified flying something. There they are. We don't know what they are. But when he started identifying these as living entities, he caught holy hell from some other so-called sky watchers out in the Phoenix area.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, they ran an absolute smear campaign on this guy.
It's very easy to catch holy hell from other ufologists. I mean, this has been going on, you know. In fact, you know, you talk about the silence group. Well, ufologists are able to silence each other very well. You know, to the general public looking in on this, it all seems like a pretty insane zoo, right?
Mm-hmm.
you know, my feeling is on this, and, you know, I've edited all these different magazines, UFO Review, which was a newspaper that ran for 5 or 6 years, and UFO Universe magazine that went for 11, you know. And there are some people that I just don't swallow. I don't buy their stories. I would just avoid them. You know, like, why say something negative about somebody when you could be spending the same amount of energy either, you know, putting forward your own thoughts or ideas or propagating something much more positive. Okay, if Billy Meyer's photos are fake, it's up to, you know, each individual to decide that for themselves. People have a brain. They can, you know, they can figure it out for themselves. Just ignore it. I'm sure, Kevin, there are probably some people that you, you know, wouldn't have on your show either because maybe, you know, they're just kind of out of bounds. But there are so many other positive things that you can do. UFO researchers spend too much time stabbing each other in the back. And to an outsider, it doesn't look very good. They figure, well, look at all these people in there. They're all, like, you know, poking fun at each other and saying that this person is a fraud and that person is a fraud. So maybe they're all frauds.
Well, and that's a problem. It is a problem. You know, in fact, I wrote an article recently about that, and it's called They Eat Their Own. But I don't even decry that. Small minds, small people, can only think in terms of, hey, I am right. And, you know, I got way too many other things to do and way too many other bigger people to talk to than someone who is stuck on the idea that, by God, I am right and everybody else is wrong. They need to go to some little two-bit hobby show and be on that. I don't have time for it here. And some of them have been very angry because they've been tossed off my show for that. And they've been very angry, and one got really inspired and said, well, I'm going to get my own show, and he did, and he spent several months talking about what a wicked person I am and helped my numbers, because the more they talk about me, that's free advertising. Yes. I appreciate it.
Yes.
Yeah. But
That's something I've always tried to avoid, and, you know, I've been criticized for that on various shows and in various other publications. And often without any reason whatsoever. I mean, one person tried to describe in an editorial why one of the publications that I edited for 11 years went out of business. It was because I published too much New Age material. Well, Kevin, in 11 years, and that would probably be, 140 issues, because we had some other sister publications, you know, spin-offs. I think I published maybe 6 what I would consider New Age articles, you know, a couple of channeling pieces and maybe somebody who thought, you know, you could be reincarnated from another planet. And also, how were they privy to my to the figures and sales in the magazine when I, not as publisher but an editor-in-chief, wasn't? I mean, how did they know what went on? I never saw them in my office. As far as I know, they never left the great state of California. So how could they sit there in an editorial and say the reason why our magazine failed had nothing to do whatsoever with anything that they said, and they were totally wrong? Do I get an apology? No. But that's the way it is. Anyway, there's so much going on. You know, the internet is both a godsend and of course it could also be a curse. Because one of the things is of course, the minute something happens, you hear about it an hour later. It's all over the internet, sometimes, you know, that could be good, but also, too, people have to discern what's true and what's not true, and a little bit of research always helps. In fact, that's why shows like yours are excellent, because it enables the vast audience out there to actually hear these individuals. You've had some great guests on there who have been involved with, you know, some of the episodes that we've actually read about on the internet. who have not had anywhere else to voice the, you know, give their stories and voice their opinions. And I,
well, let's get your opinion on something here. I have a flash message. He wants to know, it's Rick from New Zealand, wants to know if you or I have had any personal encounters with MIBs, and do you think that these could be temporal police keeping timelines and things like that in order? And, by the way, we only have 30 seconds.
Yes to all of those questions. In fact, my experience with the Men in Black is in my earlier book called The UFO Silencers, Mysteries of the Men in Black. In fact, if listeners go to our website, conspiracyjournal.com, and sign up for our free publication, we have a PDF, or we can send it in the mail. They buy one of our books. We'll include an extra free DVD of an interview that I spent the afternoon with Tom Dongo down in Sedona. I don't know if you know Tom or not, but
yeah.
He's been involved with some very incredible things that are going on down there that tie UFOs in with the paranormal. We went up into the mountains. He showed us a scrapbook of all these different orbs and objects and things that were seen along the Bradshaw Ranch. So if anybody goes over there and buys a book at theconspiracyjournal.com, we will put that in the package free of charge.
Outstanding. We are out of time, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being with us this evening. I want to thank our guest, Tim Beckley, for being with us. Tim, stay on the line with me for just a moment. And, folks, that's a wrap for the week. It's been an interesting week, and we've got another interesting week coming up next week. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. And you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.